Gordon.
This is The Connection. The process of college applications follows a basic rule of human relations. As one president of an elite university puts it, everybody likes to be loved. Schools want to know which suitors are devoted, and these days that means more and more colleges are relying on early decision admissions. In most cases, students pledge to attend if accepted, and they receive an answer by December. It's an opportunity for the students to express that this school is their number one choice, and since everyone likes to be loved, schools weigh that sentiment highly. Many colleges now accept more than a third of their freshman class this way. But the president of Yale, Richard Levin, is now calling for schools around the country to abandon the practice. He says it causes students too much stress, too early, not to mention that it can give an edge to affluent white students, and it does help universities fudge the numbers and up their rankings. Meanwhile, the number of students applying early decision continues to rise. So, Connection listeners, is early decision a practice to be reformed or abandoned? And who does it really benefit? The student or the school? You can join our conversation. Call us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can join us on our website at theconnection.org. And I'm joined today by Yale President Rick Levin, by Harvard's Dean of Admissions Bill Fitzsimmons, and by Jim Fallows, National Correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly and author of a recent article called The Early Decision Racket. Welcome to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll start with Rick Levin, Yale president, because you said last month, Rick, that it's time to get rid of early decision. What prompted you to say that then?
I just persuaded after several years of looking at the data and observing the reactions from around the country that this system is not serving high school students as well as it should. It certainly serves our institutions, or the colleges, that is, pretty well, because we do get a better predictability and the shape of our classes, and it's certainly a convenience to us. But I'm not sure that the effects it's having on high school students and on what goes on in high schools is a positive one.
But were the students complaining to you?
Well, I hear it from students. I hear it from parents even more. And I hear it from high school professionals, heads, school heads, and guidance counselors, who are forced to behave very strategically about college admissions, and often urge students to make early choices when they're not prepared for it.
Jim Fallows, your article, The Early Decision Racket, catalogs a number of the problems that you saw in your research with early decision. Can you just give us a nutshell overview of why it is, as Rick Levin is saying, that seems to these days favor the school instead of the student?
Right. And I think it's worth pointing out there are two classes of people, organizations that can benefit from these systems. One is students who know very, very clearly at the beginning of their senior year exactly where they want to go. They have no doubt about that, and they have no need for financial aid, and so it makes it easier for them to get into that school. It also makes it easier for colleges to have a sense of exactly who's going to be there.
And that was the original design, right?
Yes, that was the original design. The problem with the system as a whole is, number one, it is just sort of, it's grossly unfair in economic terms, that the data are increasingly undeniable, that there's an advantage to people who apply early. And to apply early, you have to not need to sort of compare financial aid offers from different schools. Since there's only one choice, they accept you, you have to go. So it's unfair in that way. The pool of people who apply and are accepted early are richer, whiter, more from private schools, more from elite public schools, and more from the Northeast than the country as a whole and as the student population as a whole. The advantage for colleges, in addition to sort of the ease of being able to craft their student body, is that as they become competitive with each other and ranked on things like their admission selectivity and the yield, that's the proportion of people who apply, who admitted, who actually attend, early admission for complicated, for arcane but important statistical reasons gives them an edge in that way. So the more people they admit in a binding early plan, the better they look statistically.
And Bill Fitzsimmons, your dean of admissions at Harvard, you said in the article that Jim wrote, I believe, that in an ideal world, we would do away with all early programs. We'd go back to the days when everyone could look at their options over the senior year. So if you want out, if Yale wants out, why don't you just do it?
It's tempting, but we live in the real world. And what we really need, I think, is to have some sort of a critical mass of colleges, not all the Ivies necessarily and not all the other great institutions either. But we need to have some critical mass because I think we simply can't sit there by ourselves and have no early option with virtually every other institution in the country allowing students to apply early.
But you might be able to at Harvard. And you might be the one school that could do that.
I think the days of a long gone. Maybe they departed 30 or 40 or 50 years ago when any institution or any two or three institutions can sit by themselves. I must say, as we noted in Jim's brilliant article, that you know we've been interested in for some time in the idea of studying what can be done for the set of problems Jim just outlined. We're encouraged by Yale's interest. We don't know whether there'll be any other colleges who might wish to go along. They'll never, we know in the Ivy League, there's never unanimity on anything. And there'd be logistical issues to work out. If we were to do away with early programs entirely, we might have to take the application deadline back to December 1st or something of that sort. But I think this is an idea worth following up. And, you know, we, of course, don't have a binding program and never have. You know, our program and the programs of Georgetown and Boston College and MIT and a few others are non-binding. So one of the big issues I think we all have to confront is whether early programs in general benefit the affluent. And I think that's a huge issue, especially for binding programs.
Well, Rick Levin, what about the response to your public call for an end to this? You must be hearing from other university presidents.
Most curiously, I've only heard from about two university colleagues, and instead I've heard from dozens and dozens of parents, students, and high school officials, all of whom, with about 99% in favor of making the kind of change that I've suggested. Yet, can I respond to one thing Jim Fallows said, because it's something I've been thinking about. The U.S. News and World Report could do us all a big favor by changing the way they compute the yield on admissions. It is true that schools can manipulate their yield and make it higher by taking more students early. That's almost definitional. If U.S. News measured only the competitive yield, that is the yield in the second round, the yield that occurs with April letters of admission, that would be a much more direct measure of a non-manipulable part of the school's competitive performance, and that would eliminate part of the reason that schools take so many students early.
I want to understand this ranking thing. Jim Fallows, maybe you can just help give me a sort of 101 on selectivity and yield without getting me too lost in figures on precisely what Rick's talking about, the U.S. News and World Report ranking.
Yes, and as President Levin knows, and perhaps your listeners don't, I should disclose that for a couple of years I was the editor of U.S. News, was both embattled about and trying to change these college rankings at the time. The two measures that are affected by this whole admissions game in the U.S. News rankings, one is selectivity. The more people you can reject, the higher proportion of applicants you can say no to, the better you look. And again, for statistical reasons, the more of them you take early, it turns out you have a higher selectivity rate. So that's one way in which your selectivity looks better. The other is yield. Essentially, that's how few students say no to you. Of each 100 students you say, okay, we'd like you to come, how many of them show up on enrollment day the next fall?
So if half say yes, you've got a 50% yield?
Yes, exactly. And 50% yield is extremely high. And now the joy of binding early decision programs from the college's point of view is that the yield on those people is 100%. You know, they're locked in. So the more of them you take that way, the better your yield looks. And that's why the more people you take early on a binding early program, the better your numbers look.
This is Bill Fitzsimmons from Harvard. Yeah. I would just like to second President Levin's thought. I think that's a very good thing for U.S. News to consider.
And Dick, this is Jim Fowles once more. I just want to underscore again for your listeners the news value of having the representatives of Harvard and Yale express concern about this. The educational business, although it's not graceful for either of these gentlemen to say it, is an extremely hierarchical one. You know, it shouldn't be that way, but it is. And having Harvard and Yale, the top of this hierarchy, say they're concerned about the system has big effects. Unlike President Levin, I heard from a lot of college officials and high school people after my article came out, probably about representatives of 70 or 80 different colleges and a couple hundred high schools. And it's clear there are a couple of colleges or universities that just aren't going to change. Columbia and Penn have been most sort of aggressive in using early programs within the Ivy League, and there's no indication they're going to change. But a lot of other colleges said if there were some kind of serious movement, and if Harvard and Yale join it, by definition it's serious within the educational community, then they would take a very serious look. And I think Stanford would be probably the next one in that category.
Okay, President Levin, are you saying that if the U.S. News and World Report changed the way that it gauged its rankings, so this way of manipulating both selectivity and yield no longer existed, that if those circumstances changed, then people could then get out of early decision, or that early decision would no longer be manipulated the way that it is?
It would just provide less incentive to take a large percentage of the class early. So it would certainly be one factor weighing in the direction, I think, of encouraging schools to abandon the program. But even if they don't abandon the program, there'd be less pressure to continually, as we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years, continually increase the number of students accepted on early programs.
And you were going to put this to your admissions committee at Yale. Have you done that yet?
We're just back in business after the holiday, and we will be doing that very soon.
And do you expect that a decision will come from that, or that Yale will based on that, then put out a call to people like Bill Fitzsimmons saying, hey, what about this?
I think there'll be plenty of discussion among the highly selective institutions about this subject in the months to come. I don't expect any immediate action. There are some questions about whether these decisions will need to be taken unilaterally, or whether they can be taken in concert. We certainly don't want to run afoul of any antitrust considerations here. So it may not be possible to reach a collective decision. We're actually reviewing that right now. But doing a legal review of that right now. But certainly. I think a national conversation on the subject would help, and I think it would be wise. I know our admissions officers are very closely attuned to what goes on in the high schools, but I doubt that very many other people in our college communities are as closely in touch with what goes on in the high schools, and I think we need to listen and hear from them to some degree to get a better sense of some of the adverse effects this has by pushing the need to think about a first-choice college not just 2 months early, but many months early in a student's career. I heard there was an op-ed piece in the New York Times right after my original statement that suggested that, of course, early admissions isn't. They said early admissions is not responsible for the pressures moving into junior years because everybody takes their SAT scores in the junior year now, their SAT exam in the junior year now instead of the senior year. Well, I would dare to say that students take their SAT scores their SAT test in the junior year now because of early admissions, not the reverse. They've got it. The person had the causality backwards.
President Levin, I want to thank you for being part of our program today. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. It is a call for a national conversation. Let's make it a national radio conversation. 1-800-423-8255. Early decision. Does it work? Does it work for you? Is it something that's just there to benefit the school? We'd like to have you call and join the conversation. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. This is The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about early decision, the way that you can get to university, the school of your choice ahead of the others by jumping the queue and joining a higher percentage of people who can get in, and whether or not, in fact, the system that was put in place has now been twisted out of shape. My guest, Jim Fallows, he's national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly and author of an article called The Early Decision Racket. We also have with us Bill Fitzsimmons. He is the Dean of Admissions at Harvard University, and we're joined on the line now by Anne McGrath. Anne is Special Projects Editor for Education at U.S. News and World Report. In other words, she is the editor of the notorious but influential College Rankings. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
You had a chance to listen in earlier as both Rick Levin, president at Yale, and Bill Fitzsimmons talked about how the different universities will use their early decision numbers to kind of juice up their rankings at U.S. News and World Report. Wouldn't it be fairly simple to make a change to take that away?
Well, I was intrigued by the proposal that we collect and actually use the competitive yield as opposed to the overall yield. And I think that maybe in Jim's article, there was also a proposal about, at the very least, collecting the data differently, breaking it out for both early and regular applicants. But I also think that it's important for schools, for college presidents who might be making these kinds of policy decisions to have a real sense of how the yield and the acceptance rate actually play into our formula. And I think that there's maybe a misconception that they that changing these numbers has a bigger and more dramatic impact than it actually does. I know there have been a rash of articles lately that seem to suggest that, you know, manipulating yield and acceptance rate, which are the numbers that can change most quickly and with the least expense, are a surefire way to boost yourself and possibly dramatically. But these two factors are among the least heavily weighted in our formula, and that yield, for instance, accounts for only 1.5% of a school's performance. So to suggest that just changing these numbers is going to have a big effect is really wrong. If you look just at yield, the math on that would be that a school would have to change its yield by 40 percentage points in order to raise its score even by 1 point in our formula. Now, obviously, combining that with acceptance rate, the move would need to be smaller. But I think that, you know, unless a school is making these kinds of changes absent some overall strategy to improve on its other numbers, the chances of it actually making much of a difference are really quite slim.
Bill Fitzsimmons, let me hear from you.
Well, I still think, even though it may not change a university's ranking by a significant degree, I think yield is something that people look at. And unfortunately, the way it's presented, it really is quite simplistic, you know, as Rick Levin suggested. So I still think it would be worth certainly at least breaking both yields out so that people would have a little better sense of how that works, because it's much more than it's a number that people look at pretty carefully. And it goes beyond the rankings.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something we could certainly consider doing. Could I just ask what you guys think would happen? And I'm not saying that this is our plan, but if U.S. News didn't even consider yield, what kind of an impact would that have, if any? I mean, aren't there other really strong reasons for schools to be concerned about their yield beyond the institutional reasons, beyond the rankings?
Jim Fallows, why don't you start on that? You know both sides of this.
Yes, I want to give my greetings to Anne, with whom I used to work. And I think I agree with Anne that yield and acceptance rates are smaller factors than most people would think in the U.S. News rankings. But number one, also, as Anne was saying, they are the main factors that can change year by year. You know, your endowment doesn't change much year by year, and other things don't change. Your location doesn't change. So that's the main thing that adds to a volatility to the ranking. Second, even beyond the U.S. News rankings, as I think Anne is suggesting, these have a big impact on how colleges square up against each other, how high school counselors are looking at things. And so these yield figures, which are, as both of the college representatives have suggested, which are skewed by the blending of the binding and non-binding yields, they do have an impact both within the U.S. News rankings and more generally. One other quick point, if I could, I should have mentioned earlier a basic fact about binding early plans, which really affects everything else. And this was a study conducted at the Kennedy School at Harvard showing that on average, applying for a binding early plan gave you as much advantage in being admitted as 100 extra points on the SAT test. That's a huge difference, 100 points in the SAT. And that's why all the talk about whether the early pool is richer or from private schools is significant, because there is such a clear advantage in applying early.
And I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Ann McGrath is Special Project Editor for Education at U.S. News and World Report. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. We don't have to get deep into the realm of yield and selectivity, but we'd like to know what you think about the idea of changing early decision. We'll go first to Louisville, Kentucky, and Barrett is on the line. Hi, Barrett.
Hi. I'm calling because I applied early decision to Barnard, and I work really hard at school and I have a good GPA, but my SAT scores, I'm not a good standardized test taker. And I took them in my junior year, and they just weren't competitive with Barnard scores. And I was deferred from early decision, but I felt like by applying early, I let them know that that's really where I wanted to be.
Can I clarify, Barrett? You said deferred from early decision means you applied but were turned down, or that your guidance counselor told you not to?
Oh, no, it just means that they're putting me off till the spring.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So I was deferred, but I really felt like, I had read that before about the SAT scores, like, because they're probably not going to accept a lot of early decision candidates that have low SAT scores, because that just immediately brings their, statistics down. But I felt like even though I was deferred, it still left a lasting impression on them. And
can I ask you, though, Barrett, when you applied early decision, did you know beyond any shadow of a doubt which school you wanted to apply to, or did you just sort of pick your number one and say, I'm going to go early there?
I knew. I really wanted to be there, and I knew since the summer, since I visited, that that's really where I wanted to be.
And so what does it mean for you now? Are you discouraged in terms of...
I thought I would get in early, and it was sort of disappointing. It was a letdown. But when I thought about it, when I went for my interview, they let me know that it was that, like, I told them about my SAT score situation, and they were like, well, it's, I mean, not in direct relation to this comment, but they let me know that it was common to be deferred. So right. I'm not discouraged, because I feel like it did, like, it may not have added an extra 100 points, but in the long run, it let them know something that I couldn't do through my SAT scores.
All right, Barrett, I want to thank you for calling, because you've actually raised a point which, Jim Fallows, you can help us with, and that is that, early decision is there for a reason. Some students like it for reasons that Barrett was explaining.
Sure. And again, to return to a point where we started, there are some people for whom this is a plus. If you know just where you want to go early, and if you're from the kind of family background where you don't need to compare financial aid offers, and if you're from the kind of school where counselors can prepare you for this, then clearly you're better off with binding early plans than without, because they give you a better chance of being admitted. But an analogy I like to think of here is like the purchased draft deferments during the Civil War. They were good for the people who could take advantage of that system. Still, it was a bad system. Similarly with this, it's good for the people who are the minority of people well-positioned to take advantage from it. It's good for them, but it's a bad system overall.
All right. Jim mentioned counselors, and we have, in fact, a college counselor from Newton North High School on the line. Brad McGowan works at the school in Newton, Massachusetts. Hello, Brad.
Hi.
Your thoughts on early decision. A student like Barrett comes in, says, I want to go early decision. What do you say first off?
Well, the first thing I would check is that it's definitely what they say in the National Association for College Admission Counseling guidelines on early decision. Is it a well-reasoned first choice? Are they applying because they've looked at that school in detail, they've visited it, they've looked at other schools as well, so they have something to compare it to? And if it is a well-reasoned first choice, then I don't think I would be doing my job if I didn't say that maybe early was an option.
I hear a big but coming.
Yeah. I wish, and I really appreciate you doing a show on this, and certainly I appreciate Jim Fallow's article and President Levin's willingness to take a stand on this, because early decision really casts a big negative cloud over the whole college admissions process. It might help a few students here and there, and it might benefit a handful of colleges, but the negatives so outweigh the positives that we really would be a lot better without it. And I appreciate your guests who have taken a look at this and are willing to challenge it, because it really has become a negative. It was an option for admissions at one point, and now it really drives the whole process. And as, for example, the USA Today article pointed out, editorial a couple weeks ago pointed out, it's not just a negative for the students who apply and don't get in. It has some negatives for the students who apply and get in, and it has some negatives for the students who don't even apply early decision. It drives the whole process for them as well.
Brad, I want you to tell Bill Fitzsimmons the one principal objection that you have to early decision. I mean, you're saying that it's bad for a lot of reasons. What's the one that you want people like the admissions officers at the principal universities to hear from you?
Well, I think my main problem and one reason I went into college counseling as a profession is I think it's extremely important. And it should be a process. It should be a process that students and families approach methodically, that takes place over a long period of time. What the whole early decision process does, it truncates the whole thing into a much shorter amount of time and moves it much earlier. So what you have is high school students who are less ready for maturation reasons. They're less ready to make these decisions, and we're squishing the decisions into a shorter amount of time. So just everything I know about adolescent development and in developmental psychology, goes right out the window. We're forcing very important decisions into a very short amount of time, and students really aren't ready for it.
Bill. This is Bill Fitzsimmons. Yeah. Brad, I'm with you all the way on this. And as you know, we don't do binding early decision. You know, our early action program leaves things open for admitted students to apply to any other place on the planet, and also then compare all the financial aid offers they get that might be need-based or might even be merit-based. I was a financial aid student myself, and we did not have any guidance counselor at my high school at the time, and I went through the senior year was critical to me for me to decide what kind of college I wanted to. I started thinking that I wanted a small school in the country, and I ended up at Harvard of all places, which is kind of medium size and probably not in the country. But for me today, putting myself back a few years as a financial aid student, I couldn't even think about applying binding early decision today, because I really would need to look at all the financial aid options available that come in April when you have three or four or five or six offers. And I do think that one of the reasons we have such a high percentage, almost two-thirds of the students at Harvard are on financial aid of some sort, I think part of the reason for that is that we have this open process for our early action program.
And then you get people like my daughter who halfway through her senior year has no idea what university she wants to go to. So, Brad, I want to thank you for joining us with your perspective.
And also just as important or almost as important, you asked for one reason, but the Jim Fallows pointed out the economic inequalities are really crucial.
Absolutely.
There's so many advantages to students in the upper socioeconomic levels already. You know, they can their SAT scores are on average better there. They can afford better SAT prep, for example. They can sometimes go to the prep schools. They can hire independent counselors. All the advantages are there already. This adds one more advantage to them and takes away another advantage to the students lower on the socioeconomic scale.
Thanks for joining us, Brad.
You're welcome.
Brad's a college counselor at Newton North High School in Massachusetts. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Chapel Hill and Maria. Hi, Maria.
Hi. We're snowed in listening to your program. Thank you so much.
We could send you some shovels, but
thanks. My son wishes he had applied early decision. We told him he couldn't. He's a senior at a very competitive state, our School of Science and Math, that brings the best students from the state together here in North Carolina. And so he should you know, think that he has no trouble getting into a good college, but we couldn't allow him to apply early decision because financially we are not able to help him. We have other younger children. My husband and I don't have good paying jobs, and he feels that he has missed out on getting into good colleges because he has to wait to hear from the national merit competition. He has to wait, you know, for us to fill out all those forms for financial aid in January all this month, you know. And his friends are already getting the letters of admission, and they're saying, well, you know, schools really want you to let them know that you want them. And so he feels really left out of this whole process because he couldn't say, I'm just going to pick a college and go there,
right,
regardless.
And if it's not specific enough, people who apply for early decision are applying in situations, Jim Fallows, where they can't ask for any financial aid.
Well, it's that you can't bargain, essentially. You
right.
can't compare offers from different places. And you have to, and the colleges say, well, of course, we wouldn't discriminate in the financial aid we offer. And some of the very richest ones, that's probably true. But just for any normal market principle, if you can't wait and compare offers, then you're at a huge handicap. I think this is the good and the bad side of the case that Maria is saying. The good side is I am sure, and I know that Dean Fitzsimmons would amplify this even more, I'm sure that her son will get into a very, very good college. One of the glories of America is there are so many first-rate colleges where it's so open to people. The bad side is she's right. There are people who have used up some of the places because of the advantages of the early system, and so if there were fewer binding early programs, there'd be less of this handicap.
Bill Fitzsimmons, if universities were to limit themselves to taking 5%, 10% of the students' early decision and leave things more open to people like Maria's son, would that make it any easier for them in the spring?
It might. Some of the early decision, binding early decision colleges say pretty clearly that it is an advantage to apply early decision. Others equivocate a bit, and others say there's no advantage to applying early. But I think the critical issue really is what kind of a class have you put together at the end of the year? You know, what percentage of students you have on financial aid? You know, let's look at the total picture, not when the students apply. But I think. Unfortunately, I mean, I find myself in exactly the position, thinking my own situation in the past. I sympathize with what she says because we were in exactly the same position. And if we were going through the process, I was going through the process today, I would certainly have to wait as well.
Maria, where does your son want to go?
Well, UNC Chapel Hill is one, NC State, which are state schools, and they have early decisions. They do let the students know that you have a much better chance for their better scholarships if you apply early decision. And also he has applied to Duke and Harvard. But I think he would have taken more risks, and he would have tried some other colleges if he didn't feel that those schools were only interested in kids who had made up their mind.
Maria, thanks a lot for joining us. It was nice to have you on the program. Wish your son the best from us. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about early decision, a bit of a controversy in these weeks as students are finding out what universities have accepted them and knowing that they're in the grind with all the others. My name is Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. Our number for you to join our conversation, 1-800-423-8255. And we're talking about early decision. My guests are Jim Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly and author of a recent article called The Early Decision Racket, and Bill Fitzsimmons, who is Dean of Admissions at Harvard University and a person that Jim Fallows calls perhaps the most influential person in American college admissions. So call up, give your last name, tell him where to look in the pile of applications, and maybe it'll do you some good.
And Dick, this is Jim Fallows. Could I just elaborate on that point for a moment?
Sure.
Bill Fitzsimmons is in a little bit of a strange role here because on the one hand, Harvard doesn't do the things that I and other people are complaining about. They have no binding early program. They have only an early action program where people can then compare other offers, and that's great. The rest of the university establishment says Harvard does that because it's the one place that can afford to. Its yields on the open market are uniquely high. And so the issue is not sort of complaining about what Harvard does now, but the sort of the rest of the college establishment is looking at Harvard for its steering role. And it's very, very significant, again, to underscore for your listeners that Bill Fitzsimmons is expressing these concerns.
Are you feeling a little bit of heat, Bill? People are looking to you for that type of direction that Jim's talking about.
Well, not particularly. I do think, I don't want to be terminally obsequious, but I do think that Jim's article was a bit of a watershed. I mean, it was in many respects journalism at its best, because I think what he did is he brought together a couple of critical issues, and I think people have listened as a result. I mean, I would say, we haven't totally cornered the market and on yield. I mean, the thing to remember is that about 15% of the people we admit early action don't come. To be very frank, we're not unhappy about that, because it means those 15% had a chance to look at us over a period of time in the senior year, decide that some other place, maybe a small, beautiful place in the country, such as Bowdoin or Williams or wherever, might have been a better match.
Right.
We get a chance to replace them with people who really do want to be at Harvard. They've thought about it the senior year. And I do think that, we have a 97% graduation rate. And I think, in some respects, I think that has to do with the fact that people are free to choose all the way along the path. And this is one of the reasons I think it's so important that President Levin, is thinking about this issue. And I do think, I've certainly talked with President Larry Summers here and Dean Jeremy Knowles, Dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences. And we all believe that Jim Fallows' initiative and frankly National Public Radio's ability to take this issue on, can be very helpful in perhaps making some significant changes in the future.
Let's let some of our listeners in. David's joining us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, David.
Hi, it's good to be there. I'm a student at, I guess what you would dub, one of the upper-level public schools here in Chapel Hill, and as one who is currently going through the process as a senior in high school. I did apply early decision to a college, but I've found that students in their senior year of high school, at least at my school, tend to take the whirlwind trip through the colleges in the Northeast. And in doing that, they come back with an idea of what schools they like the most, and usually it's a couple of them.
Now, they're doing this trip, in the summer of their junior year?
The summer of the junior year or the fall of the senior year. So it's usually a quick weekend trip to maybe four or five schools.
Right.
And so when a student will get back from that with a few schools in mind, he or she sits down with his parents, and as I see it, it's kind of like I would suppose the financial aid number search would be in April, but it's looking over different numbers in November, where you begin to look and see where of those schools you've picked out, you can hedge your bets or get better numbers percentage-wise as to if you can get in early.
And it's an early decision.
Right. So whereas, by spending 6 hours at a certain school, you might think that that's a great place. When you get back, it's more of sitting down and thinking, the upper echelon of schools seem to blend together for a student, and it becomes a battle of, this school has a higher early admission rate.
Right.
Maybe this would be a better chance for me. And particularly for the student who appears less stellar than his peers in one area, grade-wise, test-score-wise, or extracurricularly, it just seems like it's a way that he or she can hedge his or her bets.
Now, talk to me about you, David. You said you applied early decision. Did you get in?
I did not. I was deferred. So that was disappointing, primarily because before we went on winter break, my peers were getting into places, and it seemed to them to be such a great relief. And I knew as I was getting ready to take exams that my winter break was just going to be full of application after application, which, thankfully, I finished 2 or 3 days ago.
So it was a bit of a scramble for you. So, I mean, would you say to our listeners that the whole idea is a bad idea? You took advantage of it.
I did take advantage of it, and I think I do see flaws in a lot of ways, and when I hear Dean Fitzsimmons talk about Harvard and how he's leaving options open, I guess that my great question is for schools, and especially schools that aren't binding, is that if a place like Harvard is receiving 6,000 applications for early action, and those students, as he said, aren't bound to go there, then what's the use of placing that obvious pressure on his staff or on students to get that done earlier in a time period that's 2 months as opposed to 4 months?
I think the simple answer is that every other place we compete with has some sort of an early option. And I think we felt we've had this program has been in place for 30 years, but we felt we needed to have something because, you know, students and families and many counselors actually demanded it. What we wanted was the one that did the least harm, and I think that's where we ended up. But I do think you point out this element of gamesmanship and hedging bets is quite destructive because I think sometimes smart people especially can sometimes talk themselves out of the things they really want by trying to play too many games. That's one of the dilemmas of closing things off so early. I mean, essentially, students have to decide over the summer, or at least in the very early fall of the senior year. And lots of times when you talk to your classmates senior year and talk to others, you, at least I anyway, came to a very different set of conclusions about the kind of place I want it to be. So sometimes it's just better to play it simple, as they say, play it straight. And just very simply, where do I really want to be? And just follow that and don't worry about the games.
Tough, though, when everyone else is playing the games, though.
It's
David,
true.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Oh, thank you very much.
1-800-423-8255. And Harold Wingood, Dean of Admissions at Clark University, has called the program. Hello.
Hello.
Your thoughts on this about early decision. Are you a fan or a critic?
That's not why I called, but rather to say that one of the things that we have to remember is that the early decision phenomenon is really relegated to a fairly small percentage of colleges and universities in the country, and the vast majority of kids in this country, they say this whenever I speak around the country, wind up at the first choices. And so I wonder at some level if we're not doing a disservice by focusing so narrowly on the band of schools that are able, frankly, to admit 30 or 40% of their kids through the early process, when the vast majority of us are not.
Jim Fallows.
Yes, I addressed this point in my article, and I think I actually have corresponded with the dean on this issue over the intervening months. You know, American higher education, considered in the whole, is amazingly open, amazingly unselective. It's fewer than 100 colleges, I believe, that accept fewer than half of all applicants. I mean, if there are like 3,000 or so institutions of undergraduate education, the overwhelming majority of them take most people who apply. So it is clear that looked at, you know, from a distance, American higher education is one of the glories of this country precisely in its openness and the way that so many of the, that American life is open to people from so many different educational backgrounds, which is very different from Japan, from France, from even England. Nonetheless, it's an undeniable, it is of undeniable importance how those most selective 100 universities and the, say, upper 20% of the high school establishment that competes for them, that is an important part of American life. And then you see it in politics, you see it in business, you see it in academia, you see it in income distributions. And so I think it's the fact that this is a statistical minority does not make it unimportant.
So I'm not saying that it's unimportant, but it's important to remember that there are lots of options. And in fact, there's some research not long ago that showed that, in fact, the highest earners were from some of the public institutions in the country. And it's just important for us to remember, as you point out, and I agree with the other points that have been made, by the way, that there are lots of options. And I just wanted to make that point.
Dean Wingood, I want to thank you for calling in. He's Dean of Admissions at Clark University. And we're going to Boston. Mark's on the line. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Go ahead, please.
My question is regarding the question of financial aid. My daughter applied early, and we needed financial aid. And it was early decision, not early action. And I called financial aid, and I said, what happens if we don't get the kind of financial aid that we need? And they said, you can opt out if you want. In other words, I was not obligated, or she was not obligated, to stick with her early decision if the financial aid package was not strong enough.
And Jim Fallows, doesn't that happen, that a lot of people, although they're supposed to be bound by early decision, find a way to step sideways and out?
I don't know the numbers of how many people actually end up not taking a so-called binding admissions offer because the financial aid package is not there. Clearly, the college is not going to send federal marshals there to make you enroll and make you pay, even if you don't like the offer. Nonetheless, I think the more common pattern is the one we heard from Maria in Chapel Hill. When you know that financial aid is going to be very important, then having a range of options, as Dean Fitzsimmons was saying about himself in his youth. youth. And I was in a similar situation, you know, many years ago of applying to a lot of colleges like him just to see what the offers would be. So I think that yes, there are legal ways out, but the norm is for people who are concerned about finances not to take the binding.
So, Mark, is it your advice that if people can take advantage of whatever system exists, they should?
Well, absolutely. There's no question about the fact that by applying early, your chances of getting accepted to the college that you want is better. As long as the financial aid is sufficient, we got our financial aid package and it was more than sufficient. I had a figure in mind, and if we didn't reach that figure, then we would have opted out and gone through the regular application process to the other colleges. Or tried to get the colleges we had applied to up their figure. But under no circumstances was I going to be considered bound to the college in the event I wasn't strong enough. I mean, it would have been silly. I mean, we couldn't, if we can't afford it, we can't afford it.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
And Bill Fitzsimmons, I mean, I wonder if that's not what all parents ought to do, take whatever the system offers them and apply their own rules that suit them and push that way.
Well, I think as long as they comply with the ethical guidelines that each college puts forth, it is true that most, Jim is right, most of the people who are admitted to a binding early decision college end up getting what they consider to be adequate financial aid. There are some who don't, and they will get into the deferral part and apply to other colleges. The analogy I guess I'd give, though, is, you know, I know if I put my home on the market and I put a price on it, you know, the caller had a figure in mind, and if the first person arrived and offered me the price, I might get nervous, you know, because you never know what other prices, what other offers might be out there. And I think when you accept any need-based offer from a binding place, you have no idea what might have come down the road with non-need-based financial aid, such as merit scholarships, and you also don't know whether some other college would define your need differently. And I think that's what the dilemma is for people like Jim Fallows and me, who I believe that caller, who really needed the financial aid to attend.
So a quick look ahead from you. Is it your expectation that we're going to see an early decision system altered in the years ahead?
I hope that some changes will be made. I mean, I'm encouraged by the kind of discussion that Jim and I hope today's discussion, you know, might engender. We certainly, as a university, are listening and we're ready to make some changes. And, you know, we'll see what other places do.
Jim Fallows, last word to you.
I do think that some change is ahead. It's not going to be a monotonic one because there are a number of universities that just find this so much to their advantage, they're going to stick with it. But I'm impressed that critical mass is being reached, especially among high school counselors, thinking this is driving their kids nuts and driving them nuts too. And so I would predict that you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, some influential colleges will make influential changes.
You also suggested university students should make this something they should protest or talk about. Any word back on that?
Well, this article came out, I guess, in the first couple of days of September when the idea of things that college students might be paying attention
right.
to was different from what it's been since then.
So we'll see. Thank you, both of you, for being with me this hour.
Thank you.
Jim Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly and author of a recent article, The Early Decision Racket. Bill Fitzsimmons, Harvard's Dean of Admissions. We talked earlier this hour with the president of Yale University, Rick Levin, U.S. News and World Report Projects Editor Ann McGrath, and Brad McGowan, college counselor at Newton High School in Newton, Massachusetts. If you have thoughts on this or were a caller who didn't get in, we encourage you to go to our forum with your ideas. We're at theconnection.org. We had help producing our program today from Dara Manoogian, Tim Monroe, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugarts. Lisa Chow is our intern. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.